Well, we've been talking about the church, and we've been reminding ourselves that Jesus said to his disciples, after he had surprised Simon Peter by telling him that he was the rock, and then adding, "And on this rock I will build my church." He made it very, very clear that he was thinking in terms of church, and we've been reminding ourselves, church is not somewhere we go, church is something we are. So Jesus intentionally said that he was here intent on building a community of people uniquely belonging to him. Not only that, he said, "It's my church. It is something that is intensely precious to me." The Apostle Paul, when he said goodbye to the Ephesian elders, reminded them that their job was to oversee the church and to give them a sense of how significant their role as elders was to be. He said that they were to oversee the church that Christ had purchased with his own blood. Now that gives pause when we think of the church in the biblical understanding. And so it's no surprise that Jesus says, "It's my church." So he was thinking in terms of building a community of faith. He was making it abundantly clear that it was intensely precious to him. And thirdly, he said, "And I will build my church." In other words, he says, "It's mine and I'm going to build it." That being the case, we need to be thinking very, very seriously indeed about the role of the church in the economy of God. There are people today who would say quite happily that I am committed to Christ, but I'm not interested in his church. There are, of course, people who are deeply committed to a church, but seem to have little understanding of what it means to be committed to Christ. And either situation is not what Jesus had in mind. He wants us to know what it is to be committed to him and committed to what he is committed to. And what is he committed to? It's abundantly clear. It's my church and I am going to build it. Now, of course, we can talk about the church as that which is invisible, mystical, and universal. And that is appropriate. But on the other hand, Scripture speaks frequently not only of the church that is invisible, mystical, and universal, but it speaks of that which is tangible and visible and local and geographical. And so we need to understand that when we identify with Christ, we identify with a universal community, but also that there are local geographical expressions of that universal community that needs, and we need also, our commitment to it. And so that is why we're spending time thinking of the church. And we've been looking at what I like to call the prototypical church. That is the original church, the church in Jerusalem that was founded on the day of Pentecost. And you'll remember that when the Spirit of God was poured out, and the Father had said all along he was going to do it, and Jesus had joined the dots on this to his disciples, when the day of Pentecost was fully come, as Scripture puts it, the Holy Spirit was poured out upon the little group of disciples. People who didn't understand it ridiculed it. That's a common human reaction. And Peter didn't appreciate the ridicule when they said, "These people who are filled with the Spirit are just filled with another kind of spirit. They're drunk." He said, no, that's not it. This is what the Father had promised. This is what Jesus explained to us. God is now bringing together disparate individuals and baptizing them into a new body, a new community. The church was born in Jerusalem. Now that, by definition, becomes the prototypical church. And I think one of the basic things that we can do in any endeavor, in any institution, is to think in terms of what was its origin, what was the fundamental dimension of this thing, what were the things that they believed, what was the structure, what was their intent. And I'm afraid that we tend to think purely in terms of the here and now, but we need to remember that we'll never really understand the present until we understand the past. And we certainly ought to be very, very careful about projecting into the future without building upon the present that makes sense to us in the light of the past. We need to be thinking of the prototypical church. Well, the result of Peter's preaching on that particular day was 3,000 people got converted. And all of a sudden, you've got 120 people who've got 3,000 new belongers. Now, what are they going to do with them? And this is critically important. And in Acts chapter 2, we're told what they did with them. It said they devoted themselves to the apostles' teaching and to the fellowship, to the breaking of bread and to prayer. And I want to focus on that verse now, for it speaks of the three basic things that happened when the community of faith came together. Notice that it says that these new converts, these new followers of Jesus, devoted themselves to certain things. That's a very strong word. It means there was an intensity about them. They had come to an understanding, probably a not very rich understanding initially, but they come to an understanding that Jesus of Nazareth, who had been crucified, God had raised him from the dead, and in so doing had declared him to be Lord and Christ. That was enough to give them pause. That was enough for them to say, what have we done? And if it is true that we crucified Messiah and God has raised him from the dead, we need to look again into Jesus as the promised Messiah, which they did. And they concluded that he was Lord of all. He was the King of the kingdom. And they devoted themselves to him and to his cause. And so that's the key word, that as these people became the prototypical church in Jerusalem, they did so with an intensity of feeling, an intensity of commitment. They devoted themselves to what? Or to put it another way, when they gathered together, what did they do? And we're told three things. They devoted themselves to the apostles' teaching and to the fellowship and to the breaking of bread. Now, I'm going to break that down for you simply, and I trust it will be memorable as well. I believe the three things that should happen when the church gathers, and we are, of course, a community of faith, when we gather first of all for the apostles' teaching. That is discipleship. I'll show you the connection between teaching and discipleship in a moment. So they gathered for discipleship, and secondly, fellowship, and thirdly, worship. Now, Luke in Acts writes about they gathered for the breaking of bread and for prayers. And as we look into those words, we'll realize that what he's really talking about is a sense of worship that was corporate and clearly was foreshadowed in the life of the temple, in the life of the synagogue, with which these early disciples were very familiar. So we're going to look at those three characteristics of the gathering of the church. And first of all, they gathered for the apostles' teaching. Now, what do we mean by the apostles' teaching? Well, we don't mean by that Peter and James and John and the other guys sat down one day and put their heads together and said, all right, well, we've got a chance to start something here. And so what are we going to do with it? How are we going to go with this? That was not the point. It was not the apostles' teaching in the sense that this teaching originated with the apostles. It didn't. Jesus spent 3 years in public ministry, And he devoted an extraordinary amount of that time to 12 men. He really poured himself into those 12 men. And he spent a lot of time training them and equipping them. They became his disciples. Now, towards the end of his ministry, this is what Jesus said specifically to these 12 men that he had trained. He said, now look, your job is very, very straightforward. You're going to go, and you're going to go into all the world. In other words, he's beginning to point out to them the universal dimensions of this community of faith that he's going to build. You're going to go into all the world, and you're going to make disciples wherever you go. And then he filled in some details, including these critically important words. He said, you're going to go into all the world and make disciples, and you're going to do that by teaching them to obey everything that I have commanded you. Teaching. Teaching. You are going to make disciples by teaching them to obey everything that I have commanded you. Now, I suggest to you that there are two important things in that little statement. The first one is this. Jesus said to these disciples, your job is to teach these new converts to be obedient. That is a huge lesson. That is something that many of us have extreme difficulty learning. We don't want to obey. You see, to obey means that we acknowledge we are not the ultimate authority. There is another authority. To obey means that I have an attitude that does not come naturally to me. It is a submissive attitude. I'm going to have to learn to obey. But obey what? Well, once I have learnt an obedient spirit, a submissive spirit, we could go into details then, and Jesus gives the details. He says, teach them to obey everything that I have commanded you. Notice command. It's not suggested. It is not that Jesus said, oh, I have a few suggestions for you. If you have time and it's not going to mean too much of a change in your lifestyle, I'd like to suggest that perhaps occasionally you do such and such and such. No, he didn't say that. He said, teach them to obey everything that I have commanded. Oh, and he also said, everything that I've commanded. They do not have the freedom to be selectively indifferent to the bits that become too difficult, too hard, or requiring too much change. So this is what Jesus said to them. Now then, the disciples, the apostles, that is the key men whom Jesus was now going to send on a special mission, for that is what apostle means. It means somebody who is sent. And by the way, the rabbis used to say, he that is sent is as he who sent him. In other words, there is a sense in apostleship of delegated authority. Jesus made it very clear that he was going to send these 12 men, actually only 11 survived, you remember. He was going to send these 11 or 12 men into the world, and as they went, they were going to go as his representatives, and they were going with the express purpose of teaching people what they needed to know and teaching them how to respond to it. I was very challenged with this idea of teaching people to obey all that Jesus had commanded. Many years ago, there was an international congress on evangelism in Lausanne, Switzerland, and Jill, my wife, and I were invited to go as delegates to this international congress. And we had to fill out voluminous forms in order to be accepted as delegates. And we were asked to describe our ministry. And so I sat down and spent a lot of time filling out this form. And part of what I wanted to explain as my ministry, as I saw it, was taken from the statement in Matthew 28 that I've just quoted to you, that our job today as pastor teachers is to teach people to obey all that Jesus has commanded us, and a lot of other things as well. And it suddenly dawned on me that I should check to see how well I was doing that which I believed I was called to, teaching people to obey all that Jesus had commanded. And the thought came to me, I have never really made a very, very careful study of all the commandments that Jesus laid upon his disciples. I've never done it. And so as this came at the end of Matthew, I thought, well, I'll start at the beginning of Matthew and I'll just start working through all the commands that Jesus gave his disciples. You know something? I was overwhelmed by it. In other words, there is so much that Jesus taught. There is so much that Jesus instructed that little group of disciples, and their job now was simply to pass on that which Jesus had impressed upon them. First of all, in terms of attitude to authority, willingness to be submissive, and then to be clear as to the specifics that are involved in being a follower of Jesus. All that to say, we do have a pretty good idea of how these disciples went about the apostolic teaching. They taught what they had learned. They taught what they had learned. That's a simple principle today. God never expects his followers today to teach what they don't know. That's an exercise in futility. But he does expect us, when we do know certain things, to be able to share them with other people who don't know. And so the first thing that we notice about the gathering of these people, these new believers, was that they utterly devoted themselves to listening intently to these apostles and learning what it meant to obey and what it meant to obey specifically the things that Jesus had commanded. Now, notice the word listening. That's not the only way people learn. And it certainly was not the only way that these 12 disciples learned from Jesus. No question about it. On occasions we read that Jesus sat down and he gathered the disciples and he taught them. In other words, he engaged in simply communicating information to them and they were expected to listen. And many people will learn a lot that way. It's not the only way that people learn, and it's not the only way that Jesus taught, and I believe it is not the only way that the apostles taught these early believers. And therefore, I believe that simply lecturing is not the only way that we should be teaching in the church to this day when the people gather. How else did they learn? Well, they learned by listening, certainly, but they also learned by watching. They learned by watching. And there are many instances of the disciples having the opportunity not only to hear the gracious words that came from the lips of Jesus and to recognize that he was saying, the words that I speak to you are not my words. They are the words that the Father has given me. But they also had the incredible privilege of seeing him in action, implementing what he was saying. One obvious example, he explained to the disciples, I didn't come to be served, I came to serve. He went on further and he said, and you are my servants, and a servant is not above his master. Now, if I, your master, didn't come to be served, but I came to serve, then it's perfectly obvious that you are not here to be served, you are here to serve. That's a no-brainer. And so they said, yeah, that's right. See, so they've got that in their heads now. And then one day, you remember, they went for a Passover meal together. Custom required that there would be somebody who would take off their sandals and wash their grimy feet before they reclined to eat. And nobody did it. And none of the disciples were willing to do it. And so Jesus did it. To tell you something, all the lectures that they'd heard on Jesus saying, "I didn't come to be served, but to serve," suddenly faded into insignificance. And they had this very, very challenging, stark representation of the reality of his teaching. They learned. And he said, "I have given you an example. I have given you an example. If you know these things, blessed are you if you do them." So how did the disciples learn? They learned by listening and they learned by watching. How did the apostles teach? Well, I guess by saying, listen to what we say and watch what we do. And therein lies the challenge of teaching. And therein lies the challenge of example. And therein lies the challenge of discipleship. But they didn't just learn through listening and learn through watching. How else did they learn? Well, they learned by doing. And that's how a lot of people do their learning. I must say that in the community of faith in which I grew up as a young person in England, most of our learning was by being pushed into doing what we'd never dreamed of doing. And so if we learned anything, we learned by doing it. And we had certain principles. He who never made a mistake never made anything. So we'll give you the freedom to make mistakes, but we'll put a safety net under you so that you don't crash and burn. And we'll put damage control around you so that you don't make any bigger mess than you need to. But get out there and learn by doing. That's precisely what Jesus did with them. He sent them out on an evangelistic mission, two at a time. When they came back, they were so excited. They had actually done something. In fact, they were too excited because they were excited about what they had done. And Jesus said, "Okay, we need a debrief here." And so you remember, he took them away to a quiet place. And in that quiet place, he intended to show them, okay, you did this very well, you didn't do this very well, don't go there. And so they were learning by doing. They learned by listening, they learned by watching, they learned by doing. They also learned by questioning. And some of the questions they asked were pretty dumb. You remember that Jesus, after he had been raised from the dead and was showing himself openly to them, you remember that at that particular time, they said, "Will you at this time restore the kingdom to Israel?" Well, Jesus had been explaining to them that his kingdom was not a restored kingdom and it was not going to happen at this time and it was not going to be a rebuilding of Israel to its glory days of David and Solomon. In other words, the questions they were asking were wrong at every point. But that's how you learn. You learn that you've asked the wrong question, and hopefully there will be correction, and hopefully there will be instruction, so that, as Paul puts it, the man of God might be instructed and become mature. And so how did the disciples engage in their teaching? And what did they teach? Well, I've only briefly introduced the concept to you this morning. I've only just briefly introduced this to you in this session. But I want you to think about this, that what they had learned and what they had seen and what they had heard and what they had had clarified became for them the basis of their understanding. Now their task was using the methodology that they had learned and using the material that they had been exposed to, they devoted themselves to discipling. They devoted themselves to teaching these new followers of Jesus. I can't think of anything more clear than that. So what do we do when we gather as the church? We make certain that we are learning ourselves what it is that Jesus is teaching us. We are then using every opportunity that comes to teach people in a wide variety of ways. There are some of us called specifically to do that in a very formal way. All of us are called to do it in an informal way. But one thing is absolutely certain. We need to go on from elementary teaching so that we begin to discover the whole counsel of God. This is what the writer to the Hebrews said. He said, it's time that you move on from the elementary dimensions of learning the Christian faith and get yourself deeper into a fuller understanding of the enormity of God's purposes and the immensity of his being. A lot of people just want to sort of paddle around on the edges of the ocean. No, we are to launch out into the deep. It's very interesting, if you look at the history of the Christian church, how there have always been people who were like the Corinthians. When they should have been eating the solid meat of the word and taking the time, utterly devoted to the study and the practice of all that Jesus commanded, instead of doing that, they want minimal contact. They want minimal involvement. They want minimal learning. That's not what the church needs. If we're going to have a robust church, it is going to be a church that is known for devoting itself to the apostles' teaching.